I'm Dean Newland, and welcome to the Business of Intuition, where I coach, facilitate, train, and speak on the hard science and meaningful experience of intuitive leadership in business, so you can make better decisions, forge real connections, and creatively solve problems to amplify your impact and simplify your life. Welcome to the Business of Intuition.
No matter what industry we are in, we're all in the business of changing behavior. Whether that be a leader who's trying to get her team to align with and feel passionate about her vision, or a company trying to inspire the community to purchase products and services. But each individual person on this planet has created what we would call cognitive shortcuts, also known as biases, which allows us to be able to make quick decisions and pattern recognize, without which we would be constantly assessing and getting extremely bogged down in every bit of information coming to us. Therefore, it's really important for us to be able to learn how to use these cognitive shortcuts, these biases, for good, and when needed, to change them so that we can literally, when it comes to interpersonal relationships, not only be in the shoes of another person, but be in the feet of another person. And my next guest on the Business of Intuition is an expert in so many different areas when it comes to psychology, human behavior, neuroscience, and virtual reality. Dr. Robin S. Rosenberg is the CEO and founder of Live in Their World. This is a company that she's created and founded. And if you visit her website, you will see chock full of information and interactive ways in which to engage and get free tips and tools. We had a fascinating conversation on all sorts of things regarding intuition and cognitive biases and how we need to be able to provide people not only the guidance for what it looks like to change behavior, but also the experience, the emotional experience, to be able to lock in that knowledge so it isn't just intellectual, but it's also emotional. Dr. Robin S. Rosenberg on the Business of Intuition. So Robin, thanks again so much for being a guest on the Business of Intuition. It's a real pleasure to have you. And I wanted just to start off with something that I read in your bio, that you're very much interested in use of virtual reality as part of your training and your culture change work. And so for those of the audience members who might ask the question, why VR, virtual reality training, versus live interactive training? What's the role that VR plays in cognitive learning from your background and your understanding, so people can kind of get up to speed?
Absolutely. So I can talk about the way we use it.
Sure.
So live learning, even when at its most engaging, has its limits. And so what VR can do is literally not just put you in the shoes of someone else, but in their feet. So I make a distinction between the feet and the shoes. So putting someone in the shoes is your body in their shoes, which means you're seeing their world through your eyes, if that makes sense, based on whatever your knowledge is and the way that informs your perceptions, that kind of a thing. And that's what happens with live learning, right? It's all filtered through our own experience. What VR can do when it's done well, and you know, our understanding is we've done it well, and the way we use it is to put you in the feet of another person. And so it's really seeing it through that person's eyes. So for instance, We have topic-based tracks, which I can talk more about, but one, and depends on the topic of whose eyes you're seeing it through. But there's a track to experience things from a Black man's perspective, right? In the VR part. The VR is only one part of our program, but in that part. And so you're in situation after situation after situation at work, the ways in which bias typically plays out around race. And so you're seeing it from his experience, what his associations are to it, kind of what it reminds him of, not what it reminds you of in his shoes, if that makes sense. And so that's what VR can do that live learning can't do in the same way. So role play, for instance, right? Would you role play? You can only do a role play based on what you know or imagine, right? But there's actually not really new information coming in to tell you, well, what is it actually like for this person in a role? It's really, I'm imagining based on what I know.
That is fascinating. I love the way you describe that, in the feet versus in the shoes. So would that, would you build up enough experience for the participant such that they then would see the world through that person's eyes, along with, like what you said, the memories or even their own perspectives or their own biases? Could it get that deep of a level?
Yes.
Where you would, I mean, it's a fascinating way of being able to transport somebody out of themselves into another world, if you will, into another perspective.
Right.
Okay.
Many, VR does that literally. I mean, you could take you to Mars, you know, it transports you to another perspective. I think what we do that's a bit different is my understanding is it literally makes that distinction between shoes and feet.
Yes.
And so it's much more powerful in that way. You know, it's a difference between imagining someone yelling at you. For instance, this is not in our VR, but someone imagining someone yelling at you versus actually being yelled at, right?
Understood.
They just feel really different.
So, all right, now you got my brain kicking in here. So I could see where that would be very useful for an individual to be able to put themselves into somebody else's feet and have tremendous insights from that. Can you do that in a group setting as well, whereby you might solve a problem as a group or do a facilitation as a group in VR? Say it's around planning, say it's around team dynamics, say it's around, I don't know, some issue that the team is dealing with their interpersonal skills. Can it help in that area as well?
Yes. So a couple of things I want to say. First, let me say about VR. Because especially with COVID and work from away, you know, work from anywhere, people can do VR. You don't need a headset, you know, a dedicated immersive headset to have a VR experience. And in our program, we expanded because of COVID so that people can use what's called a mobile VR headset, where you put your phone in a basically like a phone carrier that you then, it's like goggles, right? And you put a phone in it and you put it on your face. And you can have a VR experience. That's called a mobile VR headset. It's like Google Cardboard, but better.
Okay.
Very inexpensive. There's also something called immersive video, which for your listeners is YouTube 360 is a good example of that. So they should just look up and watch a YouTube 360 video.
Got it. Okay.
And you can sort of move around, so to speak, in the video. People have done this for sometimes in some photos, you can move around, but it's just by way of what is VR. So, you know, what is it really and what does it mean these days? Work from away and if you don't have a headset. So,
okay.
The other thing to know, because now we're talking about interpersonal issues.
Yes.
Right. So, I'm a psychologist. And one of the things that we know is if you want to change behavior, right, which is really what we're talking about, you want it to become a habit. The goal is for it to be automatic.
Correct. Yes.
Right. That's the goal. Yes. We're going to learn a new set of skills and we want them, in essence, practiced in real time, in real life, as well as in VR, so that we just don't have to think about it anymore. I mean, that's what a habit is. It's just automatic. You don't have to dedicate a lot of mental bandwidth to it. So one and done's or one-off interventions don't work to develop a habit.
Right.
Which is why many DEI interventions fail, because they're one-offs. It could be one day, it could be 1 hour. It's a one-off intervention, and people really need help building that habit, if you will, and getting the information in the right size chunk. So I don't know if you or your listeners have had this experience, but if you're in a conference all day or even a 1 hour talk that's very dense with information, at some point you stop taking in the information.
Right. Overload.
You really,
yes.
You yeah. just, yeah. It's just, you can't absorb anymore.
Yes.
And you won't remember what comes after because it didn't actually get in. If yes. it doesn't get in, you can't remember it.
Yes.
Right. And so you need it in the right size chunks of information over time. This is what we know from
time both space research. Learning.
Time space yep. learning, drip learning, yep. distributed learning. Exactly.
Yes.
So back to your question about interpersonal skills and can it be done in a team? Yes. And in fact, it's really much better. And our program is set up to that. We recommend that teams or working groups go through it at around the same time. It doesn't have to be the same minute, but you know, you could just say people should do this module on this day, right? Because the whole point is you want everyone aligned in the same direction.
Yes.
You want everyone to understand, well, what is it supposed to look like that we're supposed to do? Right. It's not enough to say, don't do this, or this is bad, or we're trying to be more inclusive, or whatever the abstract concept is. It's really, well, what does that mean here? What should I be doing differently? What should we be doing differently? I need specific guidance. Again, the research shows us it's really both for habit training and DEI interventions. When you look at what works, you need specific guidance. So when you have the teams or the team going through around the same time, then everyone understands and can be aligned in the same direction.
So, oh boy, where do I start here, Robin? Let me back up here. So Zuckerberg recently has been talking about changing Facebook to Meta.
Right.
I think it, yeah. And then also he's been referencing things like the metaverse.
Right.
And where we spend a lot of time with others in this VR world, if you will. Where are we headed here? I mean, are we moving in a world where our interactions are all virtual? And should they be? Or is VR, to your perspective, your background, your education, your knowledge, a tool to help us become better humans in the live world?
Wow, that is a densely packed question.
I told you we don't have enough time for all this stuff. It's like, yeah, no, so a lot to it.
The danger of VR, of a VR metaverse, depending on what's in it. So, you know, the VR is a tool, like any tool. It can be used for good or ill, intentionally or unintentionally.
Yes.
And the idea of spending a lot of time in VR is the research that I know, aside from motion sickness or, you know, whatever, it's not a great idea, right? Because you're basically living in a simulation. Mm-hmm. There was a graphic novel and then a bad movie made of it called Surrogates. I think it was with Bruce Willis. And if we think about how, I don't want to say addictive, but how enticing computer games are for some people, or just the gamification of whatever online, VR is that times 10 or times yes. 100, right? Because you're really immersed in it. And so the issue is then, why would I leave? Why would I want right. to be in the real world if this fantasy world is so much better?
Right.
Right. And so what am I doing to make my life better?
Right.
And I'll just go online. And so we see this a little bit with people who spend a lot of time online and not having real life contacts. This was before COVID.
Yes.
Right. That they tended to be more depressed. And we in fact know from COVID that when people were deprived of real social contact, it was very hard.
Yes.
I mean, there are many issues around COVID, but so, you know, is that a good thing to draw people in to be online more? You know, it can make a Zoom meeting better because you will feel co-located. Mm. Is that worth having to have a headset on your face? Is that worth being tuned out from your actual environment? Right. Because if you have a headset on your face, you're actually not being aware of what's happening around you. Right.
Right. In the real world. Right.
Right.
Yes.
And even if you have glasses, so you're not totally tuned out. So it's not a whole headset. Let's say they invent some kind of you know, in the same way they have AR glasses or augmented reality glasses, they have VR glasses. You know, what does it mean? And I don't think we have enough information about what that does to society, but I can't imagine it's a really good thing. I can't imagine a way in which offering that people could be at work co-located 8 hours a day in VR is better.
Now, than maybe being face-to-face.
Than being face-to-face or right. just work from away. And right. actually, you know, meeting people in, you know, there's a whole thing now, which is if for many people with work from home, it's not actually home. People may rent a place in their local suburb.
Yes.
And so then you're not actually interacting with people who are right in front of you.
Right.
So is that better? I mean, there are a lot of questions, and I think it's, you know, the first do no harm.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's not clear. I think that it won't be harmful. That said, we know that one of the real challenges with work from anywhere has been collaborative work and not being co-located. And I think VR, judicious use of VR can perhaps be really helpful. And it can do, you can move things around, you can move objects in space. I mean, I think it's terrific as a tool for that, which is different than as a general way of being.
So on that topic, COVID, everybody has been dealing with how much of our workforce should be live versus somewhere out in about after. Let's just imagine that COVID is past us now, or at least we found a way to live with it. What would be your advice to an organization around how best to engage people, knowing that VR is one of those options?
So I think it really depends. And it depends. People who tend to get motion sick will get motion sick in VR. So you kind of have already excluded a certain number of people. Some people don't want to wear something on their face. If you wear glasses, it's a little less comfortable. They're heavy. So I think there's the top-down issue of what does the organization want? And there's the bottom up issue of what do employees want? And what is it used for? I mean, again, it is a tool. And if you have a hammer, everything can look like a nail, but it doesn't mean it is a nail. And so it's really what being very thoughtful and strategic if you're going to use VR about why.
Yes.
You know, with a hybrid workplace, there are all kinds of potential equity issues. So we do, among the things that we do is leadership training around leading hybrid working groups and teams, because it is unique, right? And it's different than remote, so which everyone has gotten practice at this year.
Right.
So, you know, I think VR can be an incredibly useful tool when it's used for what it actually works well with. But I think if it's not turning everything into a nail, you know, it's not a hammer that wants everything to be a nail. Although, you know, Mark Zuckerberg may want everything to be a nail.
Well, it's his business model. Well, yeah, he's, yes, understood. Got it. So it's again, we're getting this other new tool that's becoming more and more potent. And it sounds like what you're saying is we need to be very strategic and thoughtful about how best to use it. And that it could be used for good, it could be used for ill, and there could be even some unintended consequences that we just aren't even aware of yet.
Well, for sure. We know that there are unintended consequences. Right, but that's why organizations should really just be thoughtful, and leaders should experience it for themselves. Of, you know, if I'm asking employees to use this tool, I should really understand it.
Yes.
And the ways that it could be helpful, the ways that it's not, the physicality of wearing it, you know, just it's, I cannot imagine there wouldn't be pushback for wearing it for long periods of time, unless people are gamers and have been using it for gaming and their motivation is so high, right? A lot of stuff, people will tolerate all kinds of pain if they're motivated. I mean, women wear high-heeled shoes for long periods of time, and it's painful, but because they're motivated. So because a leader is motivated doesn't mean an employee is motivated.
Well, you mentioned the motion sickness piece, and I may be one of those people. I don't know if I go on a roller coaster, I just like, okay, I'm one and done. That's it. You know, right. And I was talking to a friend about that. We shared the same thing. Whereas my wife, she's great with that sort of stuff. I wonder if over time, over generations, the human brain starts to change. The neural pathways start to morph in some ways where these VR tools that we have that before or now would cause us to be motion sick, but in the future, it's just another walk in the park. What's your thoughts?
Maybe. I mean, that's a really evolutionary question that I'm one of the people who gets highly motion sick. I know that our VR stuff is totally fine for people who get motion sick, because otherwise I wouldn't be able to do it. I'm highly, highly motion sick.
Okay.
I think in our lifetimes, it's not going to change. And I think it would take generations for that adaptation, I think.
Yeah.
For evolutionarily, you know, if you put in a VR headset on a kid, you know, does the kid change? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, another question to find out. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. but again, I think just in terms of training, unless you're doing one-off just-in-time training of learning how to do something mechanical, you know, something physical, that only needs one training because it's otherwise relatively simple.
Right.
Don't mistake the medium for the method, if you will, right? That VR is a tool, but it's, okay, so how do you use this tool and what is it integrated into? What's the learning that you want people to come away with, and how do you structure your teaching so that, or your training, so that people are more likely to come away with that? You know, what we do is really try to upskill people for interpersonal skills that we want to become habits that convey respect, that both develop an understanding of people from different demographic groups and where the kind of the pain points are, if you will. But also we're trying to upskill everyone for three different perspectives that all of us will be in a given work week. We're going to be the person who is disrespected or feels disrespected, which we can make that distinction or not, right? Some people would say there's no distinction. We're the bystander who sees what happened, and we want to convert that person to an upstander. Right. Then we're the person who was often unintentionally disrespectful. I mean, we do this even with people we love and we know really well, and we know what their pain points are, and we still unintentionally, right, do something that's hurtful to them. So we're going to be in all three positions, maybe because someone is a jerk in the office and we're in the remote office and they're just a jerk to everyone. And so, you know, we were disrespected by them, or because we were disrespected because of something about our demographic identity or something else personally, right? We don't know why we're being disrespected when someone disrespects us. You know, is it about us? Is it about them? Is it about the situation? Some combination. But it happens. And so the question is, well, what should I do? Should I say something? Should I do something? If so, what should I do? What should I say? If it happened in a team meeting or a working group, should I say something here or should I say it in private? These are choices that weigh heavily, that take up a lot of mental space, that create lost time. They create productivity declines because, you know, it's like, I'm going to try to avoid you if you dissed me. And then, so, you know, I'm going to be late to a meeting. I'm not going to give you something. You know, we know there's a ton of research about the ways that this affects the bottom line financially and creates people wanting to leave, wanting to quit, which, you know, great resignation. So, you know, part of it is we want to upskill people for all three perspectives. If I'm a bystander, how do I say something? Do I say something now? Do I say something later? What do I do? And if I'm disrespected and someone lets me know that I said something or did something, how should I respond? Right. And so that's where so one and done's, and even VR has its limits, because what we're talking about is not a one-off just-in-time learning of what do I do in this exact position, but it's more what are the general principles and how do I apply them?
Got it. Okay, so the three perspectives, if I could just recap this, was the bystander, the person who is receiving whatever might say for the example, I feel disrespected. So I'm sort of this, I'm the one who's having the reaction. And then there's the person who is the instigator, whether it's conscious or unconscious. So those are the three.
Right.
So this is, all right. So I have a real scenario here for you. I wanted, because I do a lot of facilitations of teams, executive teams. And for example, I'm working with a company. I'm sure a lot of people who are listening to this could relate, or at least I hope they do. Coming up with a list of guiding principles, the standards by which this team is going to behave with each other moving forward. And there could be like, say, 8 or 10, we can even define them with great specificity about what it means to give respect or what it means to deal with a conflict in an interpersonal way. So we can define this, we can create the roadmap. And yet it's just a bunch of words on a piece of paper. Perfect. You know, it's easy. It's not easy, but we get there. We've got it done. We sort of created the recipe, but we still don't know how to cook, right? We still are fumbling with it because it's not a habit, to your point. Right. And we still have our old triggers, our old neural pathways keeping us in our behavior modality that we've been at for years and years and years. And so now there's a chasm between who we are and who we want to be.
Correct.
How can VR help us bridge that gap?
Okay. So VR can help you bridge the gap in a bunch of different ways. So one of the things that we know from neuroimaging studies is that when you're in a VR experience, your brain registers it as real, right? Which is what makes VR really compelling.
Yes, correct.
So that's part of what makes it compelling or sticky, if you will. So that's one of the ways that VR can contribute because it provides the roadmap kind of into your brain. Emotionally into your brain. So we make a distinction between emotional learning and cognitive learning. And VR, our VR, again, I can't speak for anyone else, but our VR is emotional learning. Right.
Maybe,
and
we also
provide cognitive learning.
Because I know someone's going to ask, what's the difference? Right. And then let's get back to your topic before. Just a little sidebar there.
Got it. So I'm going to use George Floyd's murder and the issue of systemic racism as an example.
Okay.
Cognitive learning is just an example. Okay. But it's understanding the kind of facts and figures around what happens to Black people in the way of systemic racism. That's cognitive learning, right? I get it. Or kind of reading about description of what happened to George Floyd. Okay. That's cognitive learning. I understand. I know. I know. Mm-hmm. Emotional learning is what happens when you see the video. Right. And you may not even be understanding what you saw, but you feel something. Right. You feel really powerfully what happened there and what a travesty it was, how wrong it was. You don't need facts and figures, right? It reaches you. So I don't know if that's a helpful example.
That's a good way of describing the two. Yes. Okay. So back to where we were.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we try to marry emotional learning and then cognitive learning.
Okay. So then in a team that has developed their guiding principles for how they're going to behave moving forward, and they know that getting there is not going to be easy, some sort of virtual reality, if you will, around the emotional learning exercise to help them. Could I be practicing some of these things within a VR world? If I am, say, for example, we have now a process for resolving conflict between each other in a team. Yeah, it looks good on paper. I now know how to do it. Let's get into a simulation of actually doing it. We are on a real situation, which is where role-playing sometimes comes into play when you're in a live setting. How can VR help us with that?
So, I mean, you can do a role-play in VR. We don't offer that because there's a sense in which that's just-in-time learning.
Yeah, okay.
because each of these things, right? Because if that, like, it's different if the conflict is with someone who is, if you're the boss versus the conflict is someone who is your boss, right?
Yes.
Those are different. Even that is different. So that's the sense in which they're just in time learning.
Yes.
And we're actually more focused on the really getting the habit of the broader principles so you can apply them in any given situation, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Right? Because there's always going to be a tweak of how this situation is different than the last one I practiced. If you don't understand the general principles that underlie the guidelines.
Yeah. And I think that that's where I find this to be so fascinating and useful, is because the a person's understanding of a guiding principle, say it's a conflict, whatever, we bring our own triggers to the word conflict and the circumstances that come up with it. I may be very adept at it and have a lot of experience with it and feel pretty confident somebody else recoils and runs away.
Right.
And I don't understand why they're that. Then I take that recoiling as a lack of engagement and a lack of caring, a lack of mutual respect. And I don't understand your reaction to this. And therefore, we could have virtual reality help me get in their feet to understand why they are responding the way in which they are.
Yes. I mean, our, in general, this is interesting. What we do is really, it's a very topic-based understanding. So someone from different demographic groups or for leaders to understand this sort of power differential, if you will, you know, that's really very topic-based. I think what, if I'm understanding correctly, what you're talking about is really a more general principle.
Yes.
How do we resolve conflict?
Yes.
And I guess what I would say in the example that you provided is really the fundamental thing to practice is asking questions, right?
Okay.
Right. It's saying, hey, this is what I noticed. Is this your experience? Can you tell me more? Or it seems to me that when I mentioned about this thing that could create conflict, you seem to shut down and not engage with me. You know, is that your experience? Can you tell me more? How can we work through this? Right? Whatever the guardrails are that the company, that the organization, the team decided, if you're trying to engage with someone and they're not engaging or they're engaging in an inappropriate way, right? Because let's say they go off on you.
Yes.
It's again, just how to have these conversations, which is, hey, I want to hear what you're saying, but the tone of your voice makes it really hard for me to listen. Can we do this again and try this in a different way? Because I really want to hear what you're trying to say.
Understood. So it's the topic is around the skill of asking the question, for example, or a series of questions that you would be practicing. That the context would change, obviously, based on what's
going on. Exactly. Yeah. The context can change, but
I
the skill,
it.
And that's where, right. That,
So I got a couple more questions I'd love to dig into. One is, I remember being at a conference a while back, a bunch of master certified coaches getting together. A lot of us are 50 years and plus, and we've been around since the beginning. And I kept thinking, you know, we're out of touch with what's going on with learning and development. How is VR going to start influencing the coaching industry? And nobody really had any sense about that. How do you think virtual reality will start impacting a lot of coaches out there? Is there a tool that we can start using to help practice and help these people accelerate what is already a nice basis of time-space learning, which is what coaching is partly good at, because we keep coming back every 2 weeks for whatever coaching session we have. Can VR kind of create another layer to our coaching practices out there that will help accelerate our clients' learning?
Yes, absolutely. My guess is if someone can create one that's off the shelf for coaches to use, it will be really interesting whether coaches actually use it.
Because
two reasons why. One is in the same way that Zuckerberg has his own vision for the metaverse and a business decision, to the extent that the coaching is accelerated, ideally people will see you less, you know, the contract is shorter. And so that, you know, there's a business decision.
No incentive.
Right. And then the other thing is, in the same way that people think their interviewing skills are superb. And so even though the data show, you know, interviewing is really, there's no relationship with someone picking a successful candidate, a job, you know, hire who'll be very successful. It may be that many coaches feel they can do a better job than coaching, especially if you've been practicing for many, many years, right? You've honed your skills over the years, and that if it's off the shelf, it's not really addressing this individual coachee's needs. And so,
although
the customized, if you will.
So the transition into VR, into the coaching industry, may not be inspired by the coaches.
Right.
It could be something that the company says, we would like to deduce this. We're going to hire you as an external. We're going to bring you in as an internal. But one of the tools we want you to use is
correct.
VR. Yeah.
Correct. Fair right. Enough. That's my guess is that that's the way it will infiltrate most readily. I could be wrong. I mean, and I'm a person, so.
Well, I wouldn't call you simple.
Cynical. No, cynical.
Oh, cynical. I'm sorry. I misheard you. Yeah.
No, cynical. I hope I'm civil, even though I'm cynical.
Got it. Since this show is called The Business of Intuition, I have to ask you, can one purely be intuitive without bias? Does intuition always come with it, the baggage of bias? Or is intuition in and of itself, when it's the purest form, not racist?
Oh, that kind of bias. Oh, yeah. Interesting. Okay. So let me just say a word about bias.
Yeah.
Any kind of bias.
Sure.
They are cognitive shortcuts. We cannot live in a world without biases. We would be paralyzed if we had to view every individual stimulus that comes our way and think deeply about it before we evaluate it. Evaluate it of, do I want this book, you know, based on the cover? We just cannot live in a world where we don't have biases. They allow us to do the things we do because they're shortcuts.
So they're not a bad thing. It just is what it is. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't.
Well, they're tools.
They're tools.
For good or ill, right?
Yeah, okay. Yes.
They're mental tools. The issue about bias is when it influences behavior, right? Including judgments, mental behavior of judgments. And so the reason, I think the main reason to have unconscious bias training is for people to be aware of, identify, if you will, what their biases are, so they can understand how they may play out and address that, how to counteract that. Mm-hmm. And that's mental work. To address that, and that's where we get into, I need specific guidance. So if my biases lead me to behave in ways that are exclusionary, that are not inclusive, right, that don't promote equity, that promote disrespect unintentionally, I need to know what I should be doing instead, because my biases are leading me to automatically, as a habit, behave in a certain way, and I need new habits. But I have to know what those habits are, right? The new ones. I have to have what we call successive approximations. I need to know and then work the small steps to build up the new habit. So when you say, this is where the habits start to come in. You can see how this all circles back to what we talked about at the beginning. Intuition is based on unconscious evaluative responses to stimuli. They're based on biases that we have based on our past experience, right? So I have an intuition. If I've read books that have a book cover that are designed in a certain way, I am going to like a book that has a similar cover. My intuition, my unconscious intuition will tell me I might like this book.
Mm-hmm.
It's on really very little data about the title, the author, and then the cover.
Right.
I'm using a book cover as an example to show you sort of how these processes work. And it's the same thing with people. Right. So my biases are automatically, without conscious awareness, influencing my intuition.
So in a nutshell, is intuition from your perspective, not only, but in part, a series of unconscious biases?
Yes.
Or where our biases live, but not consciously.
But yes, but a bias is also based on past experiences. So for instance, if I don't know if you've talked with people about the thin slices research. Mm. And so, you know, people can see, I don't know, like 2 seconds of a doctor talking to a patient, I think even with the sound off, and determine like the likelihood that that doctor has been sued for malpractice, if I remember correctly. Yeah. Right. I mean, because they have enough experience with people that they have now an unconscious bias. They have a cognitive shortcut, right, based on experience. So it's not, it gets complicated because we're also then applying, if you will, our own internal group data to an individual, right? It's always risky to apply group data to an individual, but that's what our biases do, unfortunately, right? And so that's why if you live in a world where all the janitors are people of color, and you are in an organization and you see someone of color who may be dressed in a way that's very dressed down, you know, in the office, and everyone is dressed down, but you are more likely to assume that the person of color who's dressed down is a janitor. Than a white person.
Right.
Because, so it's the biases. I mean, it's not like we're born with these biases. We're born with the mechanism of biases, but we're not born with the content of the biases.
Understood.
Right. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, you did. There's so much here that I would love to get into more if we had the time. But Robin, how could people follow your work, connect with you if they would like?
Would love people to. I am on LinkedIn, Robin Rosenberg, and look for psychologists because I'm the only one. There are other Robin Rosenbergs. We live in their world is on LinkedIn. You can contact me through our website, liveintheirworld.com. There's a ton of information there. We have our own podcast called Their World. People can submit questions to our monthly Dear Robin column. You know, what should I do, Robin? Here's my situation. And you can submit anonymously. And we always have on both our homepage and the publications page, a free download. I think it's currently an ebook. Sometimes it's a white paper. Sometimes it's something else. So there's always some free download for folks.
Yeah, for those listening in, I did take a look. I perused your neighborhood a little bit. A lot of great content, a lot of good stuff. I really appreciate it. Dr. Robin Robesenberg, thank you so much for being a guest. It's just been a great way to start my day.
Gene, it was a pleasure. What a wonderful conversation. Thanks for having me.
You bet.
Thank you for listening to The Business of Intuition. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about Dean or Mission Facilitators Leadership, go to mfileadership.com. That's mfileadership.com.